the What's the Crack podcast with Anthony Martin.
Listen in live weekly on Brighton's Radio Reverb.
See whatsthecrack.co.uk and radioreverb.com for showtimes.
Now, last Wednesday, the so-called Brexit Bill was passed in the House of Commons as part of the process of Britain withdrawing from the European Union. An amendment was put forward as part of the bill which would have seen the rights of EU citizens currently living in Britain protected. However, this was rejected, 332-290. But what does this all even mean? Joining me in the studio right now to explain the bill and its ramifications is Dr. Neil Dooley, lecturer of politics at the University of Sussex, who specialises in political economy and European politics. Hello, Neil.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
No worries. So listen, what is the Brexit Bill and what powers does it have?
Brexit Bill essentially is the culmination of Theresa May and her government trying to activate Article 50 since the referendum result. So it obviously started off with the High Court challenge, the Supreme Court challenge, which entailed that it had to be put to a vote at the through Parliament, through the House of Commons and House of Lords. So what we saw this week was the passing of the bill through the House of Commons, as you said, 330 to 290, I think it was.
So
that's effectively, it is just a notification. It now allows Theresa May to actually serve notice to the European Union that Britain is going to leave, which she thought she was going to be able to do with the royal prerogative. Whole dispute about that. It turns out that she had to get parliamentary approval, which she now has.
Okay, so this is basically kind of a business proposal as such, like you get in a business, people, you know, the board maybe going, okay, we're going to make this decision. So it's basically just the precursor to Article 50 being
Yeah, exactly. It's just, it allows her to actually activate Article 50 now in the next month or so.
Okay, now as part of the debate around kind of authorising this Brexit bill, there was a few amendments put forward, and one of them was to protect the rights of EU citizens. Is that what exactly it was, or was it something different?
No, that's exactly right. It was an amendment put forward by the Labour Party, Harriet Harman, and there was a number of amendments, but one in particular was that they tack on to this bill. Yes, you can activate Article 50, but we want some protection for the rights of EU citizens currently living in the UK. We want to make sure that, you know, they will be allowed to stay and that their rights will be guaranteed. Now, this was rejected, of course, along with every other amendment that was put forward.
Okay, but does this mean that EU citizens' rights are at risk, or is it, I suppose, it would have been nice to have it in the bill?
Yeah, it gets a little tricky. I mean, at the moment, because nothing has happened yet, if you're an EU citizen, you still have all the same rights that you had. You will have until the process is actually over and Britain is out of the European Union. What it does mean, I think, is the question was, are the rights of European Union citizens living in the UK going to be used as a bargaining chip or not? And I think the real clear thing about this is that, yes, they are going to be used in some way to help the UK get a better deal once it starts negotiations. I should say as well, though, it's not the case that this means that EU rights won't end up being protected. The Home Secretary, Amber Rudd, had a letter that was circulated to some MPs during the week, and she was trying to make it clear that there will be a separate immigration bill put through that will deal with these kinds of issues, over the course of which it might be the case that rights are protected. And ultimately, all it really means at the moment is, well, two things. We're going to be used as a bargaining chip, but secondly, they're going to wait until negotiations actually start, which can't happen until Article 50 has been formally activated. So it's just, it leaves it all up in the air, but it's, well, for me anyway, it's a worrying move.
Yeah, I suppose you kind of wonder why they rejected it. I suppose the common thinking is it's either one of two things. As you said, it could be used as a bargaining chip. Mm-hmm. So they could be saying, well, look, as part of the negotiations for withdrawing from the EU, they could say, well, look, you know, we've got EU citizens living here. We look after them if you look after us abroad. Or is it pandering maybe to, you know, during the referendum itself, there was a few immigration concerns from the electorate. Is it that, or do you think it is solely the government just leaving it open to using EU citizens as a bargaining chip?
Yeah, I think it's both, really. I think they're certainly not going to do themselves any harm, individual MPs voting against this, if they're pandering to, as you say, anti-immigration feeling within the UK at the moment. So I certainly think there's an aspect of that that can't be ignored. But pragmatically, for the government's negotiating team, it does. I can see how in their minds it makes sense to keep this as some sort of bargaining chip, because in reality, they don't really have very many bargaining chips as it is. Mm. So maybe this is one that they can use to try and get some sort of a good deal.
Okay, it is kind of interesting looking at the 332 MPs have voted against the amendment. Brighton's own Simon Kirby, who is a Conservative MP, voted against it. And Maria Caulfield, who is also a Conservative MP in Lewis, voted against it. In fact, pretty much the whole party of the Conservatives voted to reject the amendment. What can we read into that?
Yeah, well, it's probably trying to read the electorate at the moment. I think it is trying to show that they're committed to a, you know, Brexit meaning Brexit. They want to make sure that they're not seen as backsliding a little bit. They're not seen as we're not committed to really listening to the electorate. And it mightn't just be that they're thinking of their constituents as you know, anti-immigration, but they want to make sure, particularly at this time, that any movement before we get to Article 50 shows that they are fully committed to leaving and fully committed to a proper Brexit. So, you know, beyond, I'm just speculating, of course, but I think it is trying to have the perception that, you know, we're not Remainers in disguise or something like that.
Yeah,
we want to make sure that we're doing this right.
So it is more to be seen to be doing the will of the people.
I think so.
Now, I suppose, kind of as Irish people, and of course, this is an Irish radio show.
Yeah.
We are led to believe that we've got special privileges here in the UK. in fact, the Ireland Act gets bandied about a little bit as a way of us being further protected. In fact, one of the comments we had on Facebook during the week, we asked people what they made of the decision to reject the amendment to protect EU citizens' rights. Someone said, depends if they plan on changing the Ireland Act, which classes us as non-foreign. What exactly is the Ireland Act for people who don't know what it is?
So the Ireland Act was a response to Costello's government in Ireland in 1948, declaring Ireland as a republic. Up until that point, Ireland was still technically a dominion of the United Kingdom, even after effective independence, still in the Commonwealth. So the issue of free movement between the two countries wasn't really an issue at all, because you were effectively still part of the British Empire in kind of a strange roundabout way. Mm. So the Ireland Act was basically trying to settle that question after the Republic had been declared. It kind of formalised this special relationship between Ireland and the United Kingdom. And as you say, in terms of British law, Ireland isn't considered a foreign country. Kind of a weird psychology of letting go going on here, I think. We're actually classed as non-foreign aliens still at this moment.
Lucky us.
So yeah, I mean, it's an interesting label, I suppose. And so, but it's not just the Ireland Act. So that's one aspect of it. But the really important thing is the 1952 Common Travel Area Agreement. And that is really, if you look at the white paper that has been prepared on Brexit, and you know, famously, I think there's about 149 references to Ireland in it. And there's a whole section four, I think, is all about the relationship with Ireland. And there's an appendix B. So it seems like they've given it a lot of thought. But really at the heart of it is when they're trying to tell, you know, don't be worried about the border. Don't be worried about Northern Ireland. Don't be worried about Irish citizens' rights. They talk about the common travel area.
Mm.
And that is to do with free movement, but it's also to do with Irish citizens and UK citizens in Ireland having special rights, such as unfettered access to employment, welfare, healthcare. We're even allowed to vote in local, national, European elections. Even ill-advised referendums we're allowed to vote in here. So that's what's up at stake. And Theresa May and Theresa Villiers before her were saying that, you know, don't worry, we've had this before the European Union, we'll have it after, it's not a problem.
Okay, but does it protect, we'll say, the right to live in different countries? You mentioned employment and healthcare.
Yeah.
Does it apply to owning a business, buying a house?
Yeah, it can. Effectively, you can do all of these things. Now, the issue is, it's not as clear cut as has been said. It's not actually the case that the common travel area can stay unaffected after Brexit. It's actually just a series of semi-formal practices and agreements. And it's actually really only formalized in what's called Protocol 20, originally of the Amsterdam Treaty in 1997. It's still Protocol 20 now in the current, you know, handbook manual of the EU, which is the Lisbon Treaty. And even though, interestingly enough, I was checking through the white paper yesterday and they've mistakenly labeled it as Protocol 22 in the official government statement of this. So that, I mean, suggests to me the level of care that's been put into their considerations of all this question. Now, the issue is, well, there's a couple of things. In Protocol 20, it only says that Britain and Ireland can manage their own relationships in relation to movement of people. All of these other things, such as, as you mentioned, residence or access to employment or healthcare, that's not actually set out the EU treaty. So it could be the case that the European Union will say to Ireland that, you know, you can't negotiate a deal which discriminates against European Union citizens on the basis of nationality. That's, you know, abhorrent to what the idea of European integration is about. Effectively, it'll all have to be renegotiated. And it's not clear that Ireland will be allowed to reciprocate any deal that Britain does, creating all sorts of huge problems.
Well, I suppose none of this has been tested before. We've got kind of the Ireland Act, we've got obviously EU treaties. But we also have the Good Friday Agreement as well, which throws another spanner in the works in some respects, isn't it, for Northern Ireland?
I think so, yeah. I mean, there's all sorts of aspects to this. Of course, there's the concern about a return to a hard border. And where I'm from is a town called Dundalk in Ireland, which is 10 minutes away from the border. And there is a concern that you could start to see, probably not passport controls, in fairness, because there's all sorts of ways you can fudge that by just denying access to things once a person has moved. So it's not necessarily going to be passports, but certainly customs controls. I can't foresee, especially now that Theresa May is committed to not seeking membership of the single market. I mean, it's absolutely inconceivable that there won't be a return to customs checkpoints. And we all, you know, anyone who kind of remembers the recent history of Northern Ireland will remember how these were flashpoints for conflict, very highly symbolic, and nobody wants to see a return to them. So that's been the one that's been most publicised. And there's been a lot of comments that, don't worry about it, it'll be fine, we'll find a way to fudge it. I don't see personally how that could possibly be the case. The EU, Brussels, won't tolerate having, a frictionless border between the EU and a non-EU country. It simply isn't, the single market cannot work that way. So if it's not British checkpoints, it'll be Irish checkpoints.
So there will have to be some changes then, you feel, in your kind of interpreting of the laws, that something will have to happen in terms of a border.
Yeah, I don't see how they can't do it. Like, the best solution they can come up with is talk about, well, we might have some fancy technology, maybe like, you know, those little cards that you have in a toll bridge or something. That would be great if it works, but I think kind of customs clearance is a little bit more complicated.
The implementation of it might be difficult.
But it's not just that as well. You mentioned the Belfast Agreement, and I think that there is a concern that under the Good Friday Agreement, any person living in Northern Ireland or who was born and grew up in Northern Ireland has the right to declare themselves as having Irish citizenry, British citizenry, or some sort of dual citizenry. The problem is, if the common travel area is renegotiated and you end up with any kind of watered down version, you'll have a case where you could be declaring yourself as an Irish citizen in Northern Ireland. You are no longer an EU citizen. Well, you are an EU citizen, but your rights aren't protected as one. And you may face undue pressures to be forced to kind of take on either dual citizenship or British citizenship. That's in contravention of the Belfast Agreement and could create all sorts of sticky problems. Something that is mentioned absolutely nowhere in any government texts or speeches I have seen on this.
So it seems like basically there is so much legal implications of every single aspect of this. Is it a case that the British government and the Irish government have to kind of sit down together and just write up completely new legislation and laws and protections? And if so, how long could you feasibly see that taking?
I think that is what's going to have to happen, but it won't just be Ireland and the UK. Of course, it'll be the European Union as well, because anything that Ireland agrees to will have to be rubber stamp by Brussels.
Okay, right.
So that makes it much more complicated. So it will form part of the overall deal, I think. And, you know, I don't think, unfortunately, Ireland's going to be high up in the priority of all this. And, you know, that's going to make it very, very difficult. I think it could take a very long time to sort all this out. And, you know, extended, prolonged uncertainty in Northern Ireland is obviously a very bad thing.
Mm. So I was going back to the amendment that was rejected last week. In reality, it sounds like it wouldn't have made much difference anyway.
Well, if they had committed to protecting the rights of EU citizens, a lot of this would go away. You could hang on to Irish citizenship up the north, and that means that your access to employment and welfare and healthcare would be more or less okay. The common travel area hasn't actually been that relevant for most things because you're also an EU citizen. So it just gave that added layer of protection to it. So that would be one very, very easy way of avoiding that particular problem. But it wouldn't completely solve all of the different issues, such as I said, the border and trade between them and agriculture. And so it would have been helpful, but certainly, it wouldn't have been, it wouldn't have solved everything.
Perfect. Neil, listen, thank you very, very much. Or Dr. Julie, thank you very, very much for coming
you're very
in today.
Welcome.
And, we'll see how all this evolves, I guess.
Yeah, well, absolutely. We'll be talking and thinking about this for a long time, I reckon.
Thank you.